Good morning. You're listening to FloridaDaily.net, and I'm Kemp Farr. This morning, my guest is John Baugh. It's time for us to talk to John because most of the publicly traded flooring companies have reported their earnings. So, John, thanks for being with us today. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to say that they were earnings and not losses.
Yeah, that's right. We've got earnings with all three of the ones you cover and just a slight decline with Dixie's. I guess my first question, are you glad Halloween has come and gone?
I don't know. I think some of the stocks that I cover are scarier than Halloween.
Yeah. Well, the reason I say that is because some of the steepest declines in the market, everybody gets jittery on them when October rolls around, and now October's come and gone. So.
Yeah. You know, trying to predict seasonality in the stock market's an inexact science for sure. But we are certainly in a very unusual period of history where while there's never clarity about future direction, I'd say it's as cloudy as it's ever going to be with all the issues at the federal and state levels and with the consumer being so taxed. It's going to be an interesting next couple of years.
Yeah, and we've seen some recent volatility. We had some great news on Thursday. The market jumped up, 250 points, and then I got a little jittery and it came back down on Friday.
Yeah, I'm afraid we're kind of going to be in that market, kind of market for a little while. I think it's going to be very difficult to discern accurately where we're heading.
Yeah, and actually this is being taped on Monday, and I've noticed just before calling you that the market has been swinging 150 points. It's not in and up negative, but it's doing a lot of moving around. Let me ask you, the results of the GDP, the fact that we're saying that the economy approved 3.5%. A lot of people are saying that that's overinflated because, as some people would say, the economy is kind of on steroids with all this stimulus and all these tax breaks.
I think there's some truth to that, and there's a lot of technical calculations that go into the GDP, mm-hmm. and change in inventory being one of them. And what we've seen is a massive liquidation of inventory end. So when you cease liquidating inventories, even if demand is the same at the user level or the pull-through rate's the same, it can look like an increase in economic activity because there's an increase of productivity that wasn't there while we were liquidating inventory. So those are sort of technical factors. And, most consumers, and which is two-thirds plus of the economy, aren't going to feel any better because some factory has stopped liquidating inventories per se. They're going to feel better when they get the phone call to get their job back, and that has not happened yet and doesn't look like will happen. We're still losing jobs, albeit at a slower rate. And so it's quite usual, though, or quite normal, to see a positive GDP coming out of a downturn while the unemployment's still going up, and that's exactly what we have right now.
Mm-hmm. Because unemployment is usually a lagging indicator.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's look at some of these companies. I guess start with the biggest one, with Mohawk. I guess while their earnings compared to last year weren't stellar, it was still earnings. I think they made $68 million in the third quarter. Is that right?
They reported a adjusted EPS number of 64 cents. There was a 14-cent charge in there. And their net earnings before unusual items was about $44 million.
Oh, 44, okay. All right. Looking historically, last year their numbers were around 118. So they're still making money.
Well, profits are obviously down year over year, but that's due to the volume declines that we've seen. Yeah, I think Mohawk's management has done a terrific job of managing through the downturn. They're generating cash and staying profitable, which in the face of, I dare say, collapse in a lot of their end markets is exemplary. But it's no fun. They're still closing factories. They're still closing distribution centers. They're still laying off people. And now they're getting squeezed on the raw material side. So we're facing two quarters coming December and March, which are seasonally weak. So I'm afraid we're still going to be in it for a little while longer.
And I noticed of the three that you track that we're going to talk about, you've got them, Stifel Nicolaus has them on a hold. Is that just relative to where their stock is based on their performance, or what puts them in a hold?
Well, the stock looks fairly attractive on what we call free cash flow yield basis, which is just taking the free cash flow per share divided by the price per share. But on a price-to-earnings metric, it looks fairly expensive. Trading, even though it's off $2 today to 40, it's still trading around 40 times this year's earnings. A premium PE is warranted given the fact that earnings are so depressed. What tends to happen with cyclicals is they tend to get high price-earnings ratios when the earnings are extremely low or depressed, and they should arguably get lower, much lower PE multiples when the earnings are near a peak. You'd certainly like to think we're closer to a trough than a peak. But our concerns have more, the reason we're not more aggressive on the stock has just been that, the business is so difficult. The commercial end markets are going to continue to go south into 2010. They have a meaningful position in Europe, and believe it or not, some countries in Europe are hurting worse than the United States right now, particularly at a consumer level. And, the strong euro is hurting their ability to export from Europe to some of the countries in Eastern Europe and to a lesser degree here. So they're really facing a lot of challenges, and as I mentioned, the raw material cost now is moving against them. So, I'm not at all concerned about their ability to survive the cycle and make money. There's no liquidity issues here, anything of the sort, but I think earnings are going to be challenged for a little while until we can see a little better tone to the consumer here or the business environment.
And they've got they've got $300 million in cash, and they got a new $600 million bank facility, so they're clearly in good shape.
They're deleveraging pretty quickly in the last 7 quarters. We've gone from a net debt position of $2.3 billion to $1.5 billion. Mm-hmm. So we're $800 million lower over the last 3 quarters. So that's material progress. They can continue to generate cash even if they weren't to make a dollar of net income, which I don't think will happen. They'll continue to generate cash. Their depreciation and amortization charge to earnings is about $300 million annually, and their capital spending can sustain itself at $100 million annually for a while, so that's a $200 million free cash flow number right there that is sustainable through the downturn, in my opinion.
Yeah, and they've improved their margins during this in this recent quarter, haven't they?
Well, everything's relevant to a starting point. I'm not sure they're terribly proud of their margins versus historical levels, but in the context of where volumes are, they're decent, particularly. The Unilin margin has held up reasonably well. The Dow Talent margin has held up well. They've had the greatest challenge in the carpet area, where pricing has been a little bit more difficult to get, and raw materials are starting to rise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what about Armstrong? How are they doing? I guess their performance was pretty good, considering.
Well, yeah, I think when you look at Armstrong, they're obviously in two primary categories: wood and vinyl, a little position in laminate. Certainly the vinyl category is a beneficiary of the trade down that we're seeing with the consumer in general. So, we don't get very good industry data on vinyl at least on a current basis, but vinyl and carpet are outperforming hardwood and ceramic, partly because the housing starts use so much of that, and the housing starts are down, but also the trade down aspect. So their vinyl performance surprised me in the quarter, particularly in Europe, where they have been losing a lot of money, and so I was quite pleased with that performance. And they made money in the wood area as well. So these are small margins, so we're not doing a victory lap. But the performance, given the volume declines, is impressive. We've seen housing starts more or less bottom for a while now, and anticipation is that they'll go up. I don't know how much and when. I think I tend to be a little more bearish about the recovery on housing starts than some of my peers. But we at least seemingly, pardon the pun, have a floor on the volume here in the residential construction side. So that's an important market for the wood category. And, it's hard to fathom we'll go down from 600,000 starts annually, which is where we're running right about now. So, the hope is the construction rebounds over the course of the next, 3, 5, 7 years from these levels. Well, I don't suspect we'll go back to 2 million housing starts anytime soon. We could certainly double the number from the current rate over the next 5, 6 years. So That would be very welcomed and very, very helpful to Armstrong's business.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk real quick about Interface before we run out of time.
Well, the commercial segments, catching the flu that the residential segments had in the last 3 to 4 years, the speed, the magnitude of which commercial has declined in the last 12 months is staggering. They've compressed their recession into a year, although it looks like it will continue into 2010. You know, the carpet tile area is clearly outperforming Broadloom. You know, I'm kind of hearing industry numbers down 20-ish for carpet tile, and I'm hearing Broadloom numbers down 40-ish. So Interface is certainly, while they participate in Broadloom, they're much more a tile company. So that's helping them. They're obviously doing well in the non-office segments, particularly healthcare, education, government, and gaining share in retail. One of the staggering numbers that came out of Interface this quarter to me was that in the U.S. carpet tile business, their orders year over year in the third quarter were down only a couple of percent. And in light of what's happened, particularly with the office market, which, while not the majority of the sales, still represents 35-40% of their sales, being as weak it is, that's a pretty impressive performance. They're really pleased with what they're able to do. They're remaining nicely profitable on the EBIT line. They do pay a lot of I, as we call it, interest expense, so it dilutes their bottom line a little bit, but they're still profitable and generating cash as well. You know, and their end markets are exceedingly challenged right now, particularly in Europe, which is about a third of their mix, where the office market in Europe is considerably worse than here, which particularly in the UK and in France, to name a couple of spots. So, yeah, pretty strong performance up against the current that's flowing south.
Mm-hmm. Actually, there's several ways of benchmarking, you know, company's performance. But with Interface, I think they made $19 million, so they were only off, I think, 39% in earnings for the third quarter, which was less than any of the other two that we've talked about. So.
Well, we tend to look at absolute levels of profitability. You know, some of the year over years can be, you know, thrown off by comparisons of strength or weakness in the prior year. You know, essentially, Interface is running the last two quarters. Their EBIT margins on the modular or carpet tile side is about 10%. They're losing a tiny bit of money at Bentley Prince Street, but you know, that's a healthy margin in the context of what their end markets are doing. So yeah, that's it's down from a year prior. Both the margin and the dollar volumes are down, but the absolute level of profitability there, 10% EBIT margin, is you know, if you're going to tell me you're going to have a down you know, commercial market fall 30% in 12 months, and they could sustain a 10% EBIT margin in the face of that, I'd be pretty happy.
Well, what's the thinking at Stifel Nicolaus as far as whether or not the fourth quarter GDP numbers will be positive, flat, or negative?
Well, you know, we don't issue, per se, GDP forecasts
right.
As a firm. I think, as you touched on earlier with your question, you know, if the economy's better, it's better because the government's propping it up. And we've seen with auto sales, the minute that cash for clunkers goes away, auto sales go right back to the same depressed level that they were at before the incentive. So we really haven't seen the private market belly up to the bar. But I don't know when that changes. The Federal Reserve is clearly telling everyone that we're going to keep the pedal to the metal with easy monetary policy, essentially zero interest rates, because the risks to the downside of the economy weakening are greater than the inflation fears that are out there. So we're going to have a tough, cold winter, regardless of what the GDP numbers show. It'll be unemployment's obviously a figure that everybody looks at closely, and as well they should, because that will tell you whether or not we have a real recovery under the way. I don't think GDP is going to be the barometer that most people measure whether things are getting better or not. If indeed, GDP was positive in the third quarter, and I don't think sentiment's all that changed. So We're going to be in some tough sledding here, and hope spring's eternal. Maybe when we get the next spring, we'll have the private sector showing some signs of recovery and employment level stabilizing and maybe going back up. And at that point, I'd be ready to declare victory, but not until then.
All right. Well, like I said, we talk every quarter, so I guess the next time we talk will be January, and we'll see what it looks like then. I appreciate you spending time with us.
Thanks so much, Cam.
Okay. We've been talking to John Ball, who's a managing director at Stifel Nicolaus. He's the guy who follows all of the publicly traded flooring companies, and you've been listening to Kemp Haar and FloorDaily.net.